Eleanor Beardsley has lived in Paris for 8 years. She began reporting for NPR, National Public Radio, in June 2004. Before moving to Paris, she worked for 3 years with the UN mission in Kosovo, and before that as a television producer for a French broadcast in Washington, D.C., and as a staff assistant to Senator Strom Thurmond. She has had a fascination for French language and culture since she was a child. We met at the Café Regalia in the 15th arrondissement in Paris, near the Mirabeau Bridge over the Seine. We started out talking about reporting using cell phones. It had taken a while for us to make contact since Eleanor had been in Tunisia. By chance and her own persistence, she covered the first uprising in what became known as the Arab Spring. Since then, she has become the NPR expert on Tunisia. I'm Susan Louvet for Women's Focus, and today I'm talking to Eleanor Beardsley. We're in the middle of a cafe. Welcome.
It's great to be here, Susan.
Eleanor Beardsley is the NPR reporter from Paris. And one of the things I wondered was, you do all different kinds of stories. You do stories about bread and stories about croissant, and then you do something terrible, that the latest tragedy that happened. So what is that like, having to be in charge of everything?
Well, actually, it's very interesting. For example, yesterday I was out doing a story about it's called Femen. It's a Ukrainian group of topless protesters, feminist women, who they go to places completely, you know, with just, you know, pants on to bring attention to issues. And, it, you know, and NPR wants a story on it. And there was this rape trial that the suspects got off really. Actually, they've declared a mistrial. They're going to retry it last week. It was kind of, you know, it was in the news here. So they came out in front of the French Ministry of Justice, you know, completely topless. And, you know, just screaming. Actually, some of it I can't even use, but in French and in English. They had a big banner that said Rape Club. And so they were calling attention to this. And actually, it was quite good. And these women were quite impressive. And people do stop, and they do get on the news, and it does call attention to it. And the main head Ukrainian woman said, you know, prostitution was an issue that nobody talked about in Ukraine until we started, you know, focusing on it. And now, because of us, you can. So I thought, wow, that is interesting. Okay, so what is it like? And so, then last week I was working on a political story about François Hollande and why he's dropped in the polls. So actually, that's what makes the job interesting, you know. And I did a story on croissants a couple of weeks ago. So you are always changing, and you always have to be ready. So you're always listening to the news, you're always reading the newspapers, and you're always keeping sort of little files on all these issues that are coming up, just in case. But sometimes there's things I see coming, and I'm like, oh, I don't feel like, I know I'm going to have to cover that, but that is so boring for me, and I don't feel like dealing with it. So, you know, like, well, there was this maybe a merger of the defense companies last week, and I thought, oh, I better read up on that, but I didn't really want to. But usually it's great to have to know about a bunch of different stuff.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You obviously don't have a producer, it sounds like, or you do the research yourself.
Yeah, I pretty much do it all myself. I get contacted by a lot of French journalism students and even some Americans who want to work, and sometimes I say to them, because I don't really have the setup. Actually, to have an intern would probably take a lot of time for me to train them. But sometimes I do say, come work with me on a story. And if it's a French person, I'll say, you know, I'd like to delve into this. What do you think? And I've had some really good ones, and they know things, and they'll do research, and they'll find interviews. And so that's really great when people want to help, and they're really excited to learn. But usually, yeah, I do it all myself, unless when I go sometimes to Tunisia, you know, if I haven't been in a while. You know, I call my friends, I call my contacts, but sometimes it's hard to know what's going on, so I'll hire somebody there before I get there. But that's in Tunisia. And even then, everyone speaks French there, so it's pretty easy. But yeah, I pretty much do it all myself. And it's not really that hard. You just have to follow the news here, and you can meet people. And I have a list of contacts that I've been building for the last 8 years, so I have a lot of people on it, so I'll call them. And if someone can't help me, they can point to someone who can help me, so.
Do you have a percentage that is put aside for news from Europe or from France by NPR, or do you have to push to get your stories on the air?
I would say that it depends on the news cycle. There is a lot of news out of Europe now with the debt crisis. So that is really up to the percentage of stories they ask me for. But I would say generally, I come up with about 70% of the stories, and they come up with 30% are stories they ask for. Actually, that's more probably, they're asking for more and more, so I'd say it's 40%, 35% them and 65% me. But it's always a moving thing. You know, you talk to your editors every day. It's always evolving. So it can, the stories I do can be something totally French that's just interesting, or it can be, this is what's happening in America. How do the French deal with something like that? It can be totally news-related, like you spoke of that murder in the Alps a couple of weeks ago. It can be the Eurozone crisis. So it just really depends. And you've always got stories you're thinking about, thinking ahead, working on. There's long-term stories you're working on, and there's things that just pop up. And it's just a mix of things I say, oh, we got to do this, and things they say, you know, you got to do this. So.
Did you find that with the Arab Spring, when there was so much concentration on that, that it was hard to get things in?
Well, I was actually, the Arab Spring was actually a great break for me because before the Arab Spring, I only covered France, and I'd go to some other places in Europe. I went to Kosovo because I had lived there when I worked for the UN. So, but, you know, other correspondents, sort of, their beat was Eastern Europe and the Balkans, so I didn't really. And I actually asked to go to Tunisia when there was protests starting before the revolution. And, you know, you heard a lot about it here because France and Tunisia are so close. And so I said to my editor, who does NPR have in Tunisia, the Europe editor? And he said, nobody. Why don't you propose to go? I said, well, maybe I will. I was kind of nervous about it because I'd never been there and, you know. And I went and I just, and they said, okay, well, go ahead. I think they were going to send somebody else. But then I said, you know, there's 7 flights a day from Paris to Tunis. So they said, all right, go ahead. I got there on the last day of the dictator, Ben Ali. Zine El Abidine Ben Ali. I'll never forget that name. And I covered the revolution. And for 10 days, it was just crazy, crazy, crazy. They closed the airspace, and I was the one who covered the first Arab Spring Revolution. And I had no experience in the Arab world, you know, no war coverage experience, but it was just absolutely fascinating. And so since then, I've sort of become NPR's person for Tunisia, and I go back. I've been back 6 times in a little over a year. Since the revolution, I've been 6 times. I just got back from there. I was there in September. And so now I really do know Tunisia quite well. I have a lot of contacts there. And so for me, I'd like to say that the Arab Spring was a really great thing. It gave me a whole new reporting area. I've also been to Algeria since then. I went just into the border of Libya. Hopefully I'll get to go to more places. And so it's been a really great thing for me. It's widened the breadth of my reporting and everything. It's just been fantastic. I even had to take a hostile environment training course, which was just absolutely amazing. It was 3 days, and like they simulate. I learned so much in that course. I mean, because I came from literally knowing nothing, you know, from kidnapping to what to do if you walk into a scene where people are bleeding to death to, you know, we actually got kidnapped on the last day, and it was so real. I mean, you're really, really into it, and it's kind of scary, but it's really good training. So now I'm actually properly trained to go cover these kind of places.
Well, you have a small child, and your husband is a journalist also, you said. So what happens? How do you manage that?
Well, it's actually harder to manage the journalist husband because sometimes we're both working on the same things, but we have a very good nanny who can come. But the child has been great because France is actually, you know, I didn't have a child in the U.S., so I don't know how it is there, but having a child in France, I mean, it's not for nothing that France has the highest birth rate in Europe. It's because they have great care. First of all, kids start school, preschool, but it's a full day from 8:30 to 4:30 at 3 years old. Now, I don't want to call that daycare, but in a way, because I found it a great system. They learned a lot, but they also took naps. They had delicious lunches, and they played. It was a great thing. But you just have a system here that helps you. So he actually got into a public daycare. I actually got in quite early, but I couldn't really take him because he cried. So since I work out of, I have an office in my house, I hired a nanny so that I could sort of be with him all day. But when he was 2, I did take him to daycare, and he did like half days there. And you have to know people. You have to have a good nanny. But so that you know, if you have breaking news, you can call them. But I would say that France actually is a great place to have kids because there's a structure for you. You don't wait till they're 6 to go to school. It's there for you before, and it's really nice, and it allows women to work.
Tell us a little bit more about yourself, about the woman behind the voice that we hear on NPR.
If you'd have told me that I would be reporting from Paris for NPR, I would have never believed it. I mean, I'm really happy with what I'm doing, and I'm really also very thankful because it just sort of came together. I did take some risks, but I don't know. I was maybe lucky, too, because I absolutely, you know, was not a journalist by training, although Oh, let's see. I sort of came in the back door. And I think the only constant in my life has been French. I started learning French when I was 12, reading Asterix the Gaul comic books with my father. And he says I was horrible and I didn't want to pay attention. I believe him. But it somehow stuck in my mind that one day I'll be fluent. You know, I was growing up in the South Carolina public schools in the 70s. And, you know, it's not exactly the greatest place to learn French. So, and I kept studying in high school and then in college. And still, it wasn't quite, you know, I did this semester abroad and hung out with my American girlfriends. Okay. But I still always loved the culture. I wanted to know the songs. I wanted to know the minutiae, the details, you know. And, you know, people say, well, what can you do with French? And, you know, it didn't really matter. I just wanted to be fluent one day. And I would always come to France on vacations. And now I'm actually paid for the things I know about France and all that stuff that I learned in culture and old singers and old movies, you know, it actually matters now. So that's been great. As far as being a journalist, I discovered very late in life that that's what I really wanted to do. I was a history, European history and French major in undergrad, and I went to a business school, international business school, because they had an internship in Paris, and I really, you know, it was always this French thing. But I realized, you know, I was really not the business type, although that's been great training for this European debt crisis. I don't feel completely lost when, you know, we talk about the markets and the bonds, you know, ratings and all that. How did I get to journalism? I ended up being a TV producer in Washington for a French news station. And that's where I sort of learned the journalism, like how to put stories together. But I was never really much of a TV person either. I loved radio. And the way it happened is a friend of mine who worked for the CBC radio, he said, why don't you just get radio equipment and do some radio? And I was like, just do it? And he said, yeah. So I said, okay, well, I did. I bought radio equipment. This was in 2000. And I took my vacation in Kosovo where I had a friend working for the UN. It was the summer of 2000. It was still very raw there. It was a year after the bombings, but it was still very... And I just plunged in. I said, I'm going to go as if I was a foreign correspondent on an assignment. And I had incredible, incredible scenarios, encounters there with Serbs who took sealed shuttles into Pristina to work, and they couldn't speak Serbian in the streets or they'd be killed. With an Albanian family that went to the Serbian border to get their father out of prison, who was brought over the border by the Red Cross after being in a Serbian prison. And so I came home with this incredible tape, and there's this great show in Boston, The World, which takes freelance. And I had approached them before I left, but I was lucky. It was the timing. Milosevic was voted out, but he didn't want to let go of power. It was 2000. And they said, we're really interested in your stuff from Kosovo. And I had three stories on the air on the show The World. And I was like, this is what I want to do. Yeah. And then it took me a while to go from there to actually earn a living at it. But I built up and I had a job. I ended up working for the UN in the press office for almost 3 years. And on the side, I honed my journalism skills. I wrote for newspapers. I did radio stories for The World. And it was when I moved to Paris in 2004. That's when I really wanted to be a journalist. But everyone said, oh, no, we already have somebody. You know, no, we can't even give you a letter. You know, everything seemed closed. But I just kept trying to get in. And I finally did. And my break, and what got me in was I met John Kerry. Remember, he was running against George Bush then. The French media was talking about his French cousin, who was the mayor of a little town in Brittany on the coast. And I was like, nobody knows about this in America. But there's this. So I remember I called him up. I called up the mayor's office, and he called me back. And I was in the metro. And he said, yeah, this is Brice Lalonde. And said, oh, my God, Mr. Lalonde, I'm a journalist. Can I come see you? And I had pitched this story to The World, and they weren't really biting my stories. They were like, well, you haven't done anything in a while. We're not sure about your voice. I said, look, I'm going to see John Kerry's French cousin in his village. He spent his summers with John Kerry on the coast of Brittany. Take it on spec. Take it or leave it, but I'm going. So I went, and, of course, they took it, and it was a great story. I almost erased it in the end. But it was a great story, and that sort of got me in. Things started moving after that.
You mentioned various colleagues that you have here. Can you tell us a little bit about what the reporting world is like in Paris?
Yes, I mean, it's very competitive. It's very professional. I belong to the Anglo-American Press Club. you know, the wire services here, like everywhere, are just astoundingly fast and accurate and good. And I'm just, you know, I could never do that kind of job. It's just, it's another different way of reporting. You have the New York Times, AP, Reuters, Bloomberg, CNN, and I know, you know, all the people. The world of big bureaus is gone. Like, I think the New York Times with the Herald Tribune is the only, and their wire agencies, Reuters and AP, they have bureaus. But everyone else, even like CNN, Jim Bitterman, he's a good friend. He, you know, I think he has, it's just him. There used to be a bureau. They closed. CBS closed. I know the CBS radio person. So it's a lot of people doing sort of like me, working on their own. But it's very professional. It's very, very experienced people, high level of journalism. Again, I feel very lucky to be reporting from here. Sometimes, you know, it's very political, so it could seem boring. It's not like a revolution or... But you can always find stories. I mean, France is such a great place for human interest stories, too. There's the countryside. You know, you can go into the provinces, and it's just a completely different world. Everything shuts from 12 to 2. People have their siesta, you know. So it offers everything, and the reporting world here is very... Yeah, it seems daunting. If you're a new reporter wanting to come here, you would think, oh, my God, I could never break in. But actually, and that's how I felt when I first came, actually, people are so interested in France and Paris that I remember when there was the riots in 2005 in the suburbs, you know, I was being contacted by, you know, from CNN, Wolf Blitzer to, you know, the Canadians to USA Today. Everybody wanted something because people are so interested, really, in France and Paris. So I think there's always a niche for people here. Even if you think it's sealed up and closed, you can find your place.
Okay. Do you work together? Do you give each other tips, or how's that work?
Yeah, actually, we do. I have a good correspondent friend from Voice of America, and she also has worked for, like, the San Francisco Chronicle and some other newspapers. And she and I often share tips, and we've actually worked together on stories. And actually, when I covered the Tunisian Revolution, I convinced my girlfriends from Time Magazine and this other girlfriend from Voice of America. I said, let's go. And actually, my friend from Voice of America had lived in Tunisia, so I really wanted her to go, too, because I felt better about it. We all went, and there we were together and covering that revolution. So we often trade tips and contacts and things like that, yeah.
Well, let's talk a little bit about women who are doing this, about this is kind. It's sort of a man's world, and how do women work in it?
Well, I think there's so many women journalists now that you can't even say it's a man's world anymore. And even in the Arab world, you know, people said, oh, how was it being a woman? Okay, and it's weird to think of myself as a middle-aged woman, but I'm 48, so I guess I am middle-aged. It's the perfect job. Everyone talks to you. In the Arab world, everyone talks to you. Women talk to you, of course, because you're a woman. Men talk to you. You know, you're not constantly hit on like you were if you were 25, although actually Tunisian men do kind of chat you up, which is kind of a compliment, you know, but it's nothing threatening. So I feel like... The place I am now in my life is the perfect place. Everyone will talk to you. No one's threatened by you, and people want to open up to you. And so I feel that there's so many women doing this job. I don't even the war correspondents. All of our Arab Spring coverage was done mostly by women. You know, had Lourdes Garcia Navarro, Soraya Sarhadi Nelson, Kelly McEvers doing Syria, Deborah Amos. I mean, these are all women. So I don't even, and in Paris, the French journalist scene, there's tons of women. And this is one profession that is really open to women. And I also think, you know, maybe if I went to Afghanistan, it would be different. But even then, you know, people tell me you wear the burqa. I don't know. You wear the veil. You don't have to wear the veil in Tunisia, but, you know, people just do open up to you, maybe because you're a woman, maybe because of your age. I don't know. So I it's not a problem at all.
Okay, good. Do you feel a tension between your stories that are going out to people who are French, who are living in America and understand all about France or have an opinion about it, and people that don't know anything about it?
You mean like, would I be scared to say something wrong?
Or, no, yeah.
Or, yeah, I mean, of course my stories are for Americans, so you have to explain things. But, yeah, I would not want to characterize the French in a certain way that would... Actually, I don't think about the French people in America listening. You just can't think about that. But actually, I've had feedback from French people in America. I did a story on this little village, like, it, you know, with maybe 200 people, the most charming little medieval stone village. And this girl writes me, she said, I'm from, you know, 10 miles away from there. You got it perfect for that village. That was so great to hear that, you know. So it was great that she liked, I was glad she liked the story. But honestly, my stories are for Americans. I explain it to them how I would see it, how when I came here I saw things, you know. How, so I'm not doing doing it for French people. So sometimes I have to tell French people, you know, I'm not going to be able to include that kind of detail. I'm not going to get into those issues because it's just too much for a radio story. We have to really go to the basic stuff. So you might be surprised at what we're interested in, but that's just the way it is. So.
And people don't understand radio. I mean, you're walking by and you hear it, or you hear it in your car. You can't preach to people.
Right. And the thing about radio that I always find is you just don't have enough time to say everything you want to say. It's just so different from a written story where you really can delve into the issues, and you have to explain it with sound. The beauty of radio is that you take people there, and you have to find a way to write that makes you just understand it. It just sort of comes together with the sound and with the writing. You don't have time to explain all that. And no, you can't preach to people, but you let other people say, you know, I'm not looking for a message to get across. I'm covering France. And I let my subjects talk. That's all. And so, but you're taking people there. You know, people often write me and they say, oh, God, I'd loved, you know, I did this actually, you know, this is kind of actually stereotypical, but I went on this truffle hunting thing with Kiki the pig. And I ran with Kiki the pig through the forest while she was getting truffles. And it was true. It really happened. And I had all that sound. And people just loved that, you know. Or being in the metro or the cafe scene or being in a demonstration. People want to be taken there. That's what's different about radio. But because you have the sound, because you have all the... You're living it. You don't have really time to go into long explanations. So a lot of radio is time. You cannot say everything you want to say. You have to find a way to impart the feelings and the meaning through sound and through your subjects and with as little text as possible, really, because people don't want to hear you drone on. They can read the newspaper.
What projects do you have that you are really wanting to get into that are your plans for the future?
Okay, that's a good question. There's different phases that you go through. Like, I'll have a story I'm working on for a long time, maybe something in mind, and then there's phases where the news is coming so quickly you just sort of go from one story to another. And I think I'm actually in one of those phases right now. I just got back from Tunisia. There was so much work for a while with the French presidential election, and I was also in Tunisia. Now this fall, it's kind of light news right now, and I'm having a good time. I did this Ukrainian topless protest story. There's always the political stories that are interesting. At this very moment, I don't have a long-term project going on. The Arab Spring was just huge. That just was never ending. And hopefully I'm not even done with that, because after my training, hopefully I'm going to... I don't say I want to go to Syria, but, you know, I'd like to go back and do some more stories in other places. But right now I'm just sort of covering, you know, France is back to school after the summer vacations. The new president is taking, you know, charge. There's the Eurozone crisis still going on. So it's sort of just... I guess what I want to say is sometimes you have long stories you're working on, you've been working on for a while, waiting for the pieces to fall together, and sometimes you're just following the news. It's always varied. You're always thinking about 20 different things on any given day. It's just very interesting. It's always changing, always moving. It is kind of quick, actually. You're not going to spend 3 weeks on a story, you know. You got to get them out faster than that, so... If I have another trip, like let's say to Algeria or Tunisia or even Libya, then I would spend more time working on setting things up. And, you know, in Paris, I know it pretty well now, so you go out there. And I'm always looking for the next story to hit me. That's what I like, is when, oh, my God, that's a great story, you know, and you just go do it.
So you're planning to stay in Paris, it sounds like.
Yeah, you know what, I am right now. It's good, I love it, and there's a lot to do, but I have to say that I wouldn't mind living somewhere else. I mean, it was so exhilarating to be in Tunisia and really just discovering this place. I remember when I came back from Paris to Paris after the revolution, I thought, oh my God, this is so boring, you know. And I never thought Paris was boring before, but after being in a country, you know, completely in upheaval, it was kind of staid. And so, no, I would love to go somewhere else, actually. I would love to live in the Arab world. You know, and I may apply for one of NPR's posts, you know, bureau jobs. I mean, they have them. And, you know, somewhere like Moscow. Unfortunately, my husband lived 7 years in Moscow, so I don't think he'd want to go back. But that would be so exciting. Somewhere really, really different.
Okay. Well, keep us posted.
Thank you. I will.